Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, it's a beautiful Sunday morning. We have moved into April. When I say beautiful, actually it's glorious Sunday morning in the northeast of the world. We were blessed to wake up, see the sunshine, feel the cool breeze, see the trees swaying back and forth. Beautiful stuff. April, fourth month. In 2023, we're walking right through it, almost at a fast pace. Welcome to When Black Men Talk, is our conversations that three gentlemen get together basically on a Sunday morning. It's interesting. We get together on a Sunday morning and talk about various different things. I want to thank you for giving us a listen. Myself, Mark Elliott, soon to be joined by Mr. Maurice and Mr. Charles. I'm going to thank them in advance early on because these two cats always find a way to bring their perspective nice and strong to whatever we decide to talk about. And what we're going to talk about today may not be easy, but that doesn't stop them from getting it done. So for that, I want to thank them and thank them early because they might get a little mad at me in the onset, but they come through. I can count on them. We're going to be talking about our shadow self today. When you think about the shadow in general, the dark place. So if you put that together with us being the shadow self, the dark area behind us that we may not want to venture into, we want to close the door on, not pay attention to. But in my way of thinking, in order for us to improve, or for us to get better, sometimes we need to venture into it, understand it, realize it's there, realize it, what it could be doing to harm us, hurt us from growing and doing things that we need to be doing. So for that reason alone, we venture into it. For those reasons alone, we venture into it, and we're not afraid to go into it. The shadow self, parts of yourself, whether it's your personality traits, emotional thoughts, these things are difficult for us to accept. And sometimes we try to forget them for that reason. We don't want to pay any attention to them. But we need to stand in front of the mirror, and not only see our outer appearance, got to pick what's wrong with us and what we like and what we don't like. We need to go into the shadow because when you look into the mirror, you don't see the shadow, but it's there. When you move, it moves. So today we're going to move into the shadow and then basically see what we could be storing in there. And again, this is not an easy task. And so I invite you, as we do, to do the same thing. Take some time out and venture into your shadow. Understand what's there, why it's there, and at all costs, learn from it. You know, don't let it make you sad, bring you down, or angry. You know, spend some time in it and develop yourself a little bit more in depth. Mr. DeMaurice, if you know, I'm going to come to you. Actually, we're going to do something different. We're going to go to Mr. Charles, man, because I'm always coming to you first, Mr. DeMaurice. This morning, we're going to roll through Mr. Charles and basically giving him an opportunity to go first because this brother always kind of come in second, and we want to put him up first. Even though he came in, you know, third in our bracket, we'll talk about that another time. But he's going to go first today. Basically, from those things I spoke with Mr. Charles, emotion, thoughts, and stuff of that nature, when you think about your personal shadow, and things that, you know, we had to come to terms with or need to come to terms with. I'll start off with this. Why is it sometimes we're afraid to venture in and accept those things that we find hard to accept about ourselves? Good morning, man. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you. I'll just say what's always in the dark always comes to the light, no matter where it's placed. Anyway, but I'll leave that right there. But getting to your point... getting to your point, I think basically the issue is for a lot of us, it forces you to look at yourself, and you have to be honest, and that's hard for a lot of people, particularly when you've, I think, established some type of success in life or you feel like you've done some things in life, even when you're in a good place. But when you have to look at the shadow and these things that are connected to it, your shadow, it's real, and you got to be honest. And I don't know if people, I'm sure I'm not like that either. I don't know if I venture into that realm of thinking daily, because it's tough. You got to be honest. I mean, you know, we're all imperfect, but you got to be honest, and that might be a reason why it causes problems for people. I know that often, because if you ask me, like, what's going on, I'm like, yeah, I know this is who I am. This is one of my shortcomings. I'm working on it. But again, to get to your point, it's hard because you got to be honest with yourself, and you have to admit your shortcoming, and that can be even connected. I might have some emotions or some mental issues going with that, because you may still struggle in that area or those areas.
Yeah. A lot of times those areas that we struggle from, we might bring them from our childhood and things that we really haven't really worked out mentally, and we bring them in. It's interesting, too, about venturing through the shadow. When you don't really approach it, it doesn't go away. It could be certain thing in there that you know you don't want to accept, but when we don't spend time to really venture into it and try to understand it and maybe dispel it, it just moves with us. And I hate to use the word baggage, but over a period of time, it can just start to become baggage. Same question for you, Mr. DeMaurice. You know, I got to give it to you, man. You improved this year, bro. So you are getting better. You improved. You know, you didn't win, but you did improve.
Well, check out our sports show on YouTube and watch Mark Elliott, this clown. When he wins, it's like one of the worst things you ever want to see. Talk about gloating and just, you just got to see it. It's just something to see. I don't know if we're going to get into what our shadows are, because it took me a little while to I thought about the question. I instantly turned it to two things, and I don't know if you want me to go into a couple of things right now about myself.
Oh, yeah, for
freedom.
Yeah, we're ahead of it, man. So you're in the mirror, bro. Please, that's what we're all about, man. We're about, you know, sharing. So please,
and I can go into detail later or a little bit of it now. But the one of the things is that I'm very, very hard on myself as far as critical on myself, because me and Mr. Charles talked about this a while ago, and I think that's why we're really close, is that I'm a perfectionist. I want everything to be perfect. And when it doesn't, it's like everything could be great, but if there's one thing that stands out that didn't kind of go through, I harp on that thing and I think about it, and I'm self-evaluating all the time about what that one thing didn't kind of just wasn't perfect in what I did. And even though I may get praised for a lot of other things, everybody's praising me, and it may seem on the outside appearance that I'm good with it. I'm still harping on that one thing that I just didn't do well or didn't come off as the way I wanted it to come off. And then when I think about relationships that I've been in, there comes a point in time, I know with me, that I become so stubborn that I become stiff-necked, and whatever I'm thinking, wherever I'm going, that's what it is, and I don't turn off it. Now maybe in some of those relationships, I've learned how to, you know, kind of turn that off a little bit, but I know where that stubbornness comes from, and I know it comes from, I think it's in the DNA, part of it is in the DNA, but part of it is just life experiences where you think, or I felt that this is not going to change, and so why should I change if these situations or people that I'm involved with change? And you know, you get to a point like you're a horse, and I don't know if you've ever been around horses, but sometimes horses get to a point where they're not going to do anything. They're not going to go forward. That's it. I don't care what you do. They're just going to stand right there, and it'll take an act of God or a miracle to move them. But those are the two things that I point out, and I'll probably be going into deeper detail a little bit later as the conversation gets deeper.
Thanks for sharing, man, because one of yours I can definitely attest to. I have myself, and I've noticed the stubbornness that is there. It's been said to me numerous times, Marky, there's your worst, there's no way at all. And even when I've heard that, I've tried to quantify and understand, does it make sense? And reality is it boils down to stubbornness. And what I've learned over the years about stubbornness, and it does you no good, and realistically, it puts you in a situation where it narrows your mind to an extent because you're afraid to open up and see and try anything different and allow stuff in. It's where you want to basically, you know, where you want to be right, and you want it to be, if you don't feel like you're right, you're trying to hang on to the fact, well, if I'm not right, I can't be wrong. And for me, that has allowed me to work through that some because I never wanted to be the point to where I just kind of shut down and realize, okay, I'm doing this, but I might be doing that to the detriment of myself, to the detriment of relationships, to the detriment of others. And for that, for those reasons, I had to kind of find a way to start to walk away from it. Yeah, you say it could be a DNA trait, man. I'm going to tell you, possibly so, because you and I share some of the same relatives. And I know for a fact, man, I can speak for my mother was stubborn, bro. You talking about stubborn?
Oh, my mom. I'm not sure. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not blaming her saying she I'm not blaming her saying she gave it to me. I'm not saying that it was, you know, inserted inside me inside the womb. It's possible. I have nothing to prove or unprove that, but I have to see it for what it is. But I do want to ask, you know, before we move on, because I've heard you say this before about the perfectionist thing and the evaluation, and you're saying, you and Mr. Charles have that in common. And that strikes me because I look at perfection where we can never attain it. We can never obtain it to something that's always going to be wrong. And that's what's always going to bother you in a sense because you can never attain it. You can never get there because you always want to be. So my thing for that, and I have to attribute this to my mother years ago telling me, Mark, always do the best you can and then leave it alone. When you know you basically done your best, that's all you can do at that moment. I may not have the capacity to do any better. So for me to harp on it or evaluate it beyond that point, I'm just hurting myself and doing a disservice to myself because I can't do any better. If I'm taking a grade, I'm taking a test, and at that moment all I can get is a B, that's all I'm capable of getting at that moment. I can go back and try to get an A. But if I can get a B, guess what? I'm going to walk off of my B and I'm going to smile. Because at that day and time, that's all I'm equipped to do. And there's everything I'm not going to be great at. I'm not. I have limitations. I know I come with them. I'm not going to be great at everything. But for what I am going to be good at, I'll do the best I can. The rest, I'll let fall short. I want to pull you in, Mr. Charles, because, yeah, Mr. DeMaurice went there where we're going to basically, you know, we're going to look at some things in our shadow that really – that bothers us, that we find hard to accept. But every now and then they come knock on your shoulder like, guess what? I'm here. So those are the things that they tend to just keep resurfacing. You know, we might diss them a little bit for a little while, but they're going to come back and find us. He spoke of two, the perfection and the stubbornness. You know, I threw mine out. One is being stubbornness. And I'll come back to another one of mine, but I didn't want to totally, you know, not have you set away from the conversation. I wanted to get you in. So if you have some you want to share, my brother, here's your opportunity.
No doubt. I appreciate it. So, yeah, I'm kind of in that realm, too. Definitely have dealt with stubbornness. I think I'm getting a little better at it because a couple people pointed it out to me. And I realized with stubbornness, it's like as long as you show me that there's potential or you at least have a clue about what we're talking about. It's not, it used to be about being right and whatever, but now I'm kind of getting over that. But as long as you show me that, it's almost like a hypothesis, like an educated guess. As long as you show me you have some inkling of what the hell we're talking about, you're not clueless or we're not clueless on the other side. I said, okay, well, maybe there's room for that. And I understand maybe I don't have it all together and there might be some room. But when you're clueless, that kind of triggers my stubbornness. But then again, sometimes I'm getting better because I'm moving forward with it. But yeah, later on down the line, if we're moving this, I like to talk about that perfection aspect, but I'm not going to jump on that right now. I'm going to talk about two things that are really in my shadows. And I think one of them is I'd say trust, man, and I'm thinking about relationships. And I say that because it's not like I don't trust people from the standpoint, but the trust comes as an issue for me because I've had to do a lot of things myself. I've been very independent, being like a pseudo-only child. I had to do a lot of stuff because of issues, experiences I've had in the past. So to turn that over or trust somebody to finish what they're doing, what they need to do, if we have an agreement, that's a problem for me because I know myself. I know if I'm aware of it, I want to get it done. Okay, that's just what it is. I'm going to get it done. And when I trust somebody else to handle the business, they fall short, particularly if it's finances or something that's really important. It could be detrimental to what we have. And maybe that's where I need to move forward is sharing and explaining as to why I'm like that, which may help the other person understand me. But I know that's an issue. The other thing is impatience, and that might be connected to the trust. I'm impatient. I mean, we're sitting over here, you see something going on, I know I can fix it real quick. What are you doing? You know what I'm saying? What are you doing? I mean, we keep, somebody said this, and we keep waiting for more information. People, these are all these other intangibles. And I'm like, let's simplify this. And I think that's part of me being a closer. You know, I need to close. Let's finish this. Why are we delaying and having these all discussions? We've been talking about it a year. We can finalize this and move on to the next thing. So those are two things that I know I'm definitely working on. But from time to time, and I think it's just like you said, that the detriment to it may be is the fact that I spend so much time by myself that it's hard to sometimes play with others. It's what it is.
I like that play. Mm. Like that play with others. It's interesting you said patience, man, because that was where I was going. And, man, sometimes I feel like I'm better with that than others. But I've noticed I've had conversations and people are talking. And it's like, well, in the back of my mind, I'm like, will you hurry up? Will you hurry up? Will you kind of get to it? Because they start going off in the lilies and the fields. And I'm like, how about we just stay focused? And this phrase I came up with, just land the plane. Land the damn plane. I mean, let's just break the plane and circle around, circle around, circle. It's like, okay, what's the point? It's like they're teasing you with the point. But in reality, it's not, I need to kind of pull back on that some because that's me being impatient. It really is, man. It's me really listening and not fully listening. I want to get to, okay, you have my attention, fully trying to give it to you. But for me, I'm thinking in my mind, I'm giving my attention, make it worth my while. Make it worth my while. And reality is it shouldn't be worth my while. It should be the point if they're choosing to tell me, I should relax and pull back and be patient enough to listen. And that I know I work with. I mean, that patience, I totally understand, man, because we want to get things done, and then we like to get things done in a reasonable time. In a reasonable time. I want to, you two gentlemen basically bring up some very good points, and it's interesting how the stubbornness, we're all basically kind of rooted there for different reasons maybe, but we find ourselves there. And I want to stay there for a second, before we venture out, because I just want us to understand the possible detriment of that. And I'm glad we're talking about it and understand it as men, because as a man, I think we just think, okay, that's part of being a man. And I'm not saying it's not, but let's keep in our minds or put into our minds the damage that could be done from being stubborn. And that doesn't make us any less of a man to open our hearts up to and open our minds up to it. It just allows us to understand, okay, maybe this situation doesn't call for it. Maybe this one does. And if we can, allow ourselves to feel that and think that, we're better. We're better. It's not to say we have to unroot stubbornness from our capacity, from who we are as a person, but we learn to balance it in a sense to understand that it needs to kind of be something that we're aware of. And every situation doesn't involve, okay, me being stubborn about this and just saying, okay, it's my way or no way or acting that way. And I like what you said, Mr. Charles. You're evaluating a sense to where even with the trust, you're evaluating, or not, you said the stubbornness, or do they know what they're talking about? And I like that approach because if it's worth it, then we deserve to basically, pull back on our stubbornness and allow it to be. And I think that's how we should venture on. I want to, you know, you two brought out, and I want to get there now. We ain't got to wait. We can go right into it, because a lot of this, I believe, does kind of deal with us when we bring ourselves to relationships. And I don't think a lot of times we put that on the table, you know, when we're learning someone, they're learning us. You know, we kind of bet – sometimes we allow people to learn us based on what we do in certain situations instead of really just opening up and saying, you know, this is who I am. You know, I have a problem with this. I have a problem with that. And a lot of times we're scared to say so because we're thinking, okay, that person is going to look at you and just go, you know what, and take off. But if they decide to, then they really weren't interested in knowing you anyway. They only had a selfish gain in mind for their head, and they weren't willing to see who you were. So when I'm going to go back to trust and go back to perfection, because I think trust is something that most men deal with in general. We have problems with it. And you said it to an extent, Mr. Charles, sometimes if you basically, we give you the trust. Sometimes we open up, we lay it down, but soon as we see there's a level of something to where we shouldn't trust you, it's almost like we take our trust and we lock it in a vault and it's never to be revisited again. And I'm going to come to you, Mr. Charles. Is that a good way to handle it, or should we find ways to basically, you know, keep an open eye, keep our trust there, but still give opportunities because that one particular time should not be the end all?
Yeah, I think you should – it should not be the end all. I think it's – particularly in a relationship, it's the part of – trying to share with others and letting them understand why the importance of something or why this needs to be done. And I think because we don't let, as you said, we don't share enough information and don't communicate enough as men to let our significant other or mate know what's going on with us and what's important to us and why we need to get this done. That's kind of part to me about leadership as well. We don't share, then they don't sometimes have a clue that they need to go ahead and move forward and get this done in a timely fashion, right? They're casual because maybe that's what they're accustomed to. But in order to improve together, then I think you have to share that information. But if you do not share that and you just lock it off of one, then you're going to maybe miss out on a great opportunity. And that's what I understand. You got to give people a chance, and they might work at a different place or in a different manner. But you got to at least explain it to them. Hopefully they get it, and then you guys can move forward.
Mr. DeMaurice, I think sometimes, you know, we as men, when we harden up, you know, because we are basically afraid of getting hurt, we may not say it, but a lot of times, you know, I look at cats, man, that want to walk around, and they got this bravado where they're trying to be tough and hard. And I see through it because, to me, toughness and hardness, you don't have to display it, bro. It's how you act when situations happen. But to me, you're walking around with that bravado because you're afraid. You're almost saying to someone, don't F with me because, you know, I don't want to be F with because I'm scared. So it's like you sense if you kind of walk around with that, you're kind of basically, you're shedding that away. I look at that when it comes to trust. To get your response, but I look at that as in a sense of come to trust when after sometimes one person may do something that we don't look at as being trustworthy. When we go hide our trust and put it in a vault, we're hiding it because maybe we're afraid, we're scared, so therefore we don't extend other opportunities. Your response?
Yeah, I think that's true, that when you do break a trust with a man, especially with a man, we tend to go in dark places when we're hurt and in places where, you know, you don't want to see a man or you don't want to see yourself in because you left yourself vulnerable. This person took advantage of you in that vulnerability. And now it's time to lash out. And that's a dark place for a man. I don't know how it works for a woman. And maybe later on we can get this subject with women coming in about their shadows, if they're willing to talk about that. But with a man, when a man is hurt, I mean, when he's truly hurt, he really goes to some dark places. Now, there's a crossroad in that when you do get hurt. and you know, you're afraid, you don't want people to see you in that vulnerable stage. Do you keep going down that dark path and become destructive to yourself and others? Or do you use that energy and that darkness and that feeling to carve out and create a better man from that? And so that's the decision that we have to make as men when we get in those places where we're scared, when we're hurt, when we've been betrayed, and our trust has been kind of just taken for granted. And you have like a fork in the road on whether you're going to use this to be destructive or constructive in your life.
When Black Men Talk, myself, Mark Elliott, Mr. Jim Reese, Mr. Charles, this is what we do. It's a part of our conversations. We get together usually once a week and we explore different things. And today we're exploring shadow self. And thank you for giving us an ear. And do more than that, though. You appreciate what we're doing. You like what we're doing. Share it. Let people know that When Black Men Talk is something that they should be paying attention to. As I'm listening and we're going through this, man, this is going to require more than what we probably want to give it today. So what we're going to do is we're going to call this part one of Shadow Self, and we'll continue on next week and make it Shadow Two, because there's a lot to uncover here. There's a lot to go into, and I don't want to shorten this. I don't want to basically leave this and not basically touch some things that need to be touched. But I want to venture back into the point of just of perfection and things have to be right, because that's a delicate thing there. And I'll come back to you with Mr. Reese, because, you and I know each other, you and Charles, and so we know enough about each other to where we know what kind of triggers all of us to an extent. And as you were talking about the gloating and stuff, I never met Mr. Charles. I never met this brother. But I know what to say to get Mr. Charles to come out of his seat. I know what to say to get this brother to come out of his seat. If I want to say something to get a reaction from Mr. Charles, I say it. And I'm sure he feels the same way. He knows about me in that sense. So when I'm looking at perfection, I'm saying to myself, okay, is it for what you're feeling about perfection, is it worth the self-harm that could be doing to you when you don't have perfection, Mr. Maurice?
It's not the worth the self-harm that it's doing to me, because, from my standpoint, I think over the years, I've kind of used it to try to become better at what I do or whatever I'm doing or whatever I'm trying to master at that particular point. It does become really frustrating that even though you're striving for perfection and you probably won't get it, the frustrating part about it is that I don't want to wrap my head around that I can never be perfect, or I can't do something really perfect, because I try in ways I don't accept it, because to me, in my mind, I've seen perfect things, and I've seen people do things to perfection, and it drives me. It keeps driving me. It keeps getting me out of bed. It keeps motivating me. So I try to look at that aspect of it, like, okay, I got to get better than I did it before. But I do realize that there is a part of it that can be destructive, where I'm beating myself up. Or if I do see a little mistake in something, that I'm just focused on that instead of the overall product and saying, this is a good product, this is pretty good, this is the best that I can do at this particular time. So over the years, I think I've tried, and I've had people in my life that kind of point that out, that, hey man, this is great. This was cool, man. This was top notch. But there's always going to be that little part of me that says, I can do better. I can do better. And, I'm trying to get away from that destructive side where I'm putting myself in harm's way. I'm getting so frustrated that I look down on myself, or I beat myself down to where I feel like I'm not good enough. And so that's really the piece that, you know, I'm continually to work on, that I don't want it to hurt my self-esteem or my self-confidence to take on other tasks and try to master other things.
I'm going to come back with the question, but it's going to be the same question for you, Mr. Charles, because when I hear that and I hear the things for perfection, here's what I'm wondering. Do you spend enough time, and this is, again, Mr. Charles, we all can look at this in perfection, are you spending enough time really toasting what you've accomplished, the good you have done, to where God has brought you from point A to point C? Are you really giving that enough what it deserves? Because I think for me, when I do that, it takes me away from that sense of perfection. Because I could say to you, man, you know, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing right now if it wasn't for you. You know, if you didn't have the idea to say, hey, man, do something, this show's been on for the past 4 years, bruh, you know. And this show is never going to be perfect, but hell, we're going to keep doing it. But my point is, we wouldn't be doing this cut if it wasn't for you. I mean, we wouldn't be who we are, even when it comes to the sports show. We wouldn't. So I'm giving you a small flower. But the question is, are you giving yourself the big flowers? Or have you given yourself the big flowers? And do you continue to always give yourself the big flowers? Or do you bring yourself the dandelions that basically cancel out the big flowers?
And I was going to mention that too. I tend to look at the dandelion, and I appreciate everything you guys said, and I feel it. And man, it touched my heart a couple of weeks ago when you guys were giving me my flowers and all this other stuff. I'm like, wow, wow, wow. And, you know, it's hard to look at that sometimes. It's hard to look at accomplishments, when you're striving for perfection. It's, because I know as men, a lot of times we don't really get praise for a lot of things that we do. We kind of look at it, okay, this is what we do. This is what we do. And so, it's like a split second where you accept it, but then all of a sudden, you know, you have more to do. It's like this. I think I explained this too. After I finish a book, and I've done about eight or nine of them, it's like, okay, yeah, it's completed. You take a deep breath, and then you think about the next book. You think about the next. It's almost like I don't give my time to say, okay, job well done. Let me rest. Let me, you know, smoke the cigar and all that stuff, and have a drink and praise me and all that other stuff. I don't take enough time to do that. I admit that. I don't. I'm thinking about, okay, I got to do this all over again. I got to do this again. I got to, you know, what's the next book? What's the next challenge? What's the next project that I got to work on? Because maybe because when I've accomplished doing a lot of stuff, and I know a lot of men relate to this, you accomplish things, there's nobody cheering you. You know, we're not in the arena where people, hey, you know, I don't have that in my life where people are, you know, in my space cheering me at that particular time. So when I do get it, it's almost like you don't know how to handle it. I know for me, I don't know how to handle praise. I don't know how to handle, you know, the pat on the back, because sometimes it's just that's few and far between, and you don't always get that as a man. You know, you get, oh, you're a man, you're supposed to do that. So what's so special about it? And so I think sometimes, I know for me, I get locked in that mode where this is nothing special. This is just what I do. And, you know, you don't kind of open yourself up to kind of getting the adulation of you've accomplished things. And one more thing, and I'll get out of here. When my dad told me that over last summer, it's like, man, you can do anything you want to do. He's like, you're gifted. You are a gifted man. He's like, I've never seen anybody put their mind to something and get it done like you. He's like, everything. He's like, I watched you since you were born. And everything you put your mind to do is nothing you can't do. And that hit me so hard when he said that I, you know, it took me by surprise, because I'm thinking, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is, you know, who I am. But when he pointed it out and like, my son, you are so gifted. It blew me away.
I'm going to suggest this to you, Mr. DeRiz. I want you to go back. I know sometimes you may go back and listen to the show, but I want you to go back and I want you to listen to your response to what you said. And I want you to listen not as you were speaking, but I want you to hear yourself. But I want you to hear yourself not being you. And what you said to me is the medicine for you. You know, what I just heard is just your personal medicine, bro, where you're not spending enough time. And, you know, when you finish one book, let that next book wait a little while. Spend the time to enjoy the journey, what you have accomplished, what you have done. You owe that to yourself. And no one is going to be a better cheerleader to you than yourself. No one. And what we have to understand as men, there's a difference in celebrating who we are as opposed to having our ego stroke. And when we learn to celebrate who we are, even our miscalculations, our wrong deeds, we can still find something good about us to celebrate. And we deserve to basically celebrate ourselves. Because you're right, a lot of times other people aren't going to give that to you. But when we learn to basically understand that and give that back to ourselves, because we're putting the work in, we're doing the labor. And it's nice when others give it, you know, it's nice. But when we can give it to ourselves, we take ourselves to a different level. So I just ask that, yeah, if you don't mind, man, go back and listen to that. And if you need to call me, we talk about it, that's even better. But there lies your medicine, my cuz. There lies it, man, right there. Because, you know, you have a lot to celebrate about, a lot. And, you know, it's for you to see it and understand it, to embrace it and take it in. Same thing with Mr. Charles about perfection. You know, I'm going to spend a little more time on that. And then we'll run to our questions. And again, this show is going to roll into a part two. But I want to basically, you know, make sure before we got out of here, we got to perfection because, you know, a lot of us deal with that. So in terms of you being perfected or being seeking perfection, Mr. Charles, we want to hear about it, bro.
Yeah. Demarie said earlier that we talk about it. We do all the time. And I think because we're like-minded in that standpoint. And I think because of the fact that we're creatives, okay? And I'm not saying people don't have perfection the same way, but in my opinion, when you're a creative, one that kind of provides, you think about the written word or spoken word or whatever, even when you create other things that way, you see the world or you kind of see things a certain kind of way. And you want it to be the best that it can be. And I know other people are like that too. And Mark, I heard you when you said, you know, sometimes you got to realize that's the best you can do, and you got to be okay with that. And I've gotten better with that, but still the drive that Dean Reeves talked about as a creative, it's like I see it, I know it, I can be better. And I expect it to have flaws because nothing is perfect. You know, I know that. I think, you know, God makes things, you know, certain things that can be perfectly imperfect, right? It can be look so good, but there's something that's going to be wrong with it. It depends on who's talking about it. But I think as a creative, it's like, man, I just got to keep working on this till I can get it to the best of my ability. You know, even like with the book that I'm definitely finalizing, it's like I keep reading it over and over, and I receive other stuff from other people, but it's like, I have to make sure that it's everything it needs to be. I have nothing else to give on this. Is it going to be perfect? Nah. I used to be that way when I was younger, but now I know. But I still, that drive still comes at you. And it's not to compare yourself to other people, but it's like, man, damn. And this will be my last point on this. Particularly when it's something that is truly in what I call in my wheelhouse. That's what I do. DeMarie's mentioned. He writes books. He's the creator. He does other stuff. Certain things I know, I'm pretty damn good at that. Those things, you know, those areas, I'm really even harder on myself because it's like, yo, man, come on now. We can really do something, not about what people think is so great, but that you know is something that is, wow, that's a nice piece that you put together.
Let me ask you, Mr. Charles, about your book. I'm just curious. Do you ever think sometimes when you're, you know, the hesitation of your book, you're wondering what other people may think about it?
Yeah, early on, I'm not going to lie, because DeMaurice, boy, you something else. I can't stand you. Anyway, he's bringing out the truth. But, yeah, early on, I just thought it was some notes I wrote. And I was like, nah, this is not, this can't be a book. But then I started writing. And then I started thinking, as you mentioned, Mark, about, wow, somebody might read this. They might not think it's any good. And they might think, what the hell is he talking about? He lost me. Or I don't have any connection to it. But DeMaurice told me over and over again, he's like, dude, I think you got a book. I think you got a book. You just got to work on putting it together. And then once I got to a point, I kept playing with it. And I even let DeMaurice read like one of the first versions. And then after a while, I was like, you know what? I went back and read it. And I think I told DeMaurice, who was like, what, about a month or so ago, DeMaurice? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I called him and said, yo, man. After I read it again, I was like, I got a book, man. Because I read it kind of outside myself. I'm like, well, as if I was just reading something. And I said, I got a book. I'm not sure how great it's going to be, but damn it. It's coming together. So, yes, I do, Mark. I do think – I have thought about that, about what people think. But then again, after I put it together, I'm like, you know, the hell with that, man. I read a lot of stuff that I was like, it's all right. But I'm like, this is a real story that I think can really help people. And to me, that validates it. And at the end of the day, you put all you can do and put into it and let it stand. And if they like it, great. If it don't, that's okay, too, because – I achieved what I wanted to do. I wanted to hear, let my voice be heard and hear other people's voices be heard. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to say bump it, man. They like it. They don't. They, you know, bump it, you know, for the most part. But I want to, before we move into our questions, I really wanted to say this to you, too. And realistically, man, you two, you know, again, have to understand where you are, how you got there. I'm not saying you don't, and basically celebrate it. Because if you look around at us in totality, just as black men, I mean, look at what you see out there when you look at us. And a lot of us, they're not college graduates such as you two are. A lot of us can't speak, articulate like you two. A lot of us can't think or chose for whatever reason. We can't. That's simple, fundamental stuff. And I'm not putting those down that can't. I'm just speaking the truth. A lot of those can't have done the things you've done, Mr. Charles. I've heard you speak places you've been, things you've been part of, you know, basically, bro, you know, fights you've been to, things you have accomplished. Bro, seriously, those things are to be celebrated. As a life, they are. Same thing for you, Mr. DeMaurice. Some things you have done, bro, things you spoke of, realistically, what you're doing now. Mr. Charles, what you're doing now. You know, we've all been moved along by the grace of God to live this life and done some good things, and they deserve to be celebrated, gentlemen. They deserve for us to celebrate them individually. If no one else holds a toast up to us with champagne, bump it. Bump them. Because we've been given gifts that we utilize. And we've all been given gifts, but we've been given gifts that we utilize to the best of our abilities. As far as I'm concerned, that's enough, man. Enjoy the process. Enjoy the gift. DeMaurice, your first question for today, sir.
Yeah, man, I was thinking about when we were coming up. And I got to give you your flowers, too, before I get in my question, because we're all in broadcasting. And it's just crazy how we all kind of – in our life cycle right now, doing the thing that we felt passionate about, you know, many, many years ago, man. And the way you developed this show, I didn't know how this show would end up. The way you are, and I've grown up with you, and when you put your mind to something, ain't nothing going to deter it. So you need your flowers, too. But something that we used to grow up with, I know our dad used to take us to the barbershop and make sure our hair was you know, perfect. We talk about perfection. You know, you lined up all that stuff, your hair length, all that stuff. I'm sitting here watching brothers now that don't comb their hair. And then what really kind of pushed me over the edge with this is that they got a new comb 4.0 where it looks like a little tennis racket. Where brothers ain't combing their hair no more, they kind of let it kind of clump up, and they take this tennis racket and just go over the top of the head like they're combing it. I'm like, is this where we are now? Where we don't comb our hair? Is this it? Help me understand why not combing your hair and keeping a nice do is the thing now. I don't understand that. Please explain that to me if you can.
Well, we came up a time when pride, black pride, meant something, bro. And what kind of fortifying that was that we wanted to basically show the world, the white world, we're just as good, if not better than you, when we have our own stuff. So the afro, you know, keeping up, dressing sharp, that was part of it. And it got to the point to me now where over the years, I shouldn't say now, over the years, where you're right with the hairstyle. And I understand it's an individual thing. I get that. But it's like, you want to say, I see them saying to us in America, I don't care. And what it says to me is that, you know, they're saying that to mainstream, you know, yeah, my hair, I don't care. You know, I'm still whoever. But to me, it's a sign of laziness. It's not understanding where you are and what you should be in this world. When black people can really start to think about what your ancestors went through, you will present yourself better. You will do better. But the problem with us is that we think we just came here by accident, that we don't think about who came before us. So we come out and we act stupid. We do stupid. I mean, there are lives given up. So you could basically walk to a corner store and don't go to the back door. But we've forgotten that. We act like that didn't exist. So we walk in, we act stupid, we got our pants hanging down, we got our hair flipped over because it's a sense of entitlement. And the people that are acting that way, they ain't done a damn thing to act that way. And they forgot. They don't care about their history. Don't care about whatever. Don't give me Black History Month at 28 days, 2 days, whatever, because we don't give a shit about our history when it comes to how we act and when we carry ourselves. We don't. It could be all month. I mean, it could be all year. What does that mean? When we don't realize that because of that, we should walk around with a certain sense of pride. Black is strong, bro. It's always going to be strong. It's been proven it can't be killed. We don't know that. We don't. You got cats making millions. You're right. They're making millions. They don't care what they look like. Walk onto the basketball court looking like they don't care. You realize what Bill Russell had to go through so you could walk out there and look like an idiot? Nah, don't think about that. You put a little patch on your jersey when he dies. Your response, Mr. Charles?
Yeah, I look at that, and I've looked at it before, and a couple of individuals, I'm like, man, why don't you just go ahead and then I'm like, maybe that's the new way. I'm like, I don't know. So I understand it. D. Maurice, you know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. But for me, I know I was like, damn, I'm just getting older, bro. Because certain things I'm never going to understand, certain things I'm never going to be able to accept. And I'm like, okay, well, at least they ain't hurting nobody, they ain't killing nobody, they're not totally out the box. If you want to make your hair nappy, Kevin Durant, if you want to do that, I'm like, back in the day, we used to call them BDB. Look like just like little BBs on your head or something like that. I was like, man, put some oil or some grease on there, man, and get your hair right. But if he wants to do that, enough as well, I got to accept it because there's a lot more other things going on in life. I'm more about the sagging of the pants really bothers me more than it does you, but you're not combing your hair. That's the issue because they don't understand where that's coming from. They don't understand where that's coming from. So I guess we all have our little quirks or whatever. But if they can still handle the business and do what they need to do and understand who we are as people, I can kind of work with that, especially with the hair. Sagging pants, maybe not so much, but they're handling the business, understand where they come from and what it means to be who we be part of our people. You might get a little pass from me because some of them, unfortunately, I don't think it's ever going to change.
Yeah, I don't see it changing either, but it's to me it's like a way they using to stick their middle finger up at things. Mr. Reese, your response, sir?
Yeah, I think it's about, I think we're going out in the world and going out in society and going out among our culture and our people, it's got to be about how you present yourself. And how you present yourself really kind of dictates how people treat you and how people see you. And I know that, you know, some people will say, well, you know, I don't care what people think. Yes, you do. You do, because you wouldn't be doing the things that you're doing. In some degree, you do care about how you look, how you're presented, how you receive, how you respect it. And so I look at it as a way of, you know, like Mr. Charles said, there's some things I'm just not going to do. And it's because I was brought up in a certain way where you present yourself in a certain way and you dictate that people respect you based on your presentation and the character of the person that you are. And when you do sag the pants and you do certain things that I know is not of our true culture, then I look at you a little bit differently and I question your character. I question your knowledge and how you think of yourself and how you're representing the culture, how you're representing the ancestors, how you're representing me, because when it all comes down to it, we have the same, you know, we're glumped into the same culture, and I want you to represent me to the T. I want you to represent me and put a face on people who look like me, as we need to be respected and revered and not, you know, clowned and looked upon as a joke or a clown.
That was a good question, man. Good question. We never kind of went into that direction. I can't say never. I don't think we did in that direction, but that's a good question, man, because, again, a lot of times we look at who we are, what we're out there projecting, and not that we should care what they think, but how about, again, what we should be the best we can be? And that's the best we can be is basically wake up in the morning and don't groom yourself and go out that way. Mr. Charles, your question.
Yeah, I'll make it real quick. It's probably a hot topic, but it is what it is. Apparently, the state of New York is trying to move forward with an indictment of a former president. And my question real quickly is, do you think it's really going to hold water and it's going to get done?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. We talked about this. I think, man, he was just coming out. He shortly came out of office and, you know, threw it out. There was the attorney general at the time. I think her last name is Jones, a sister. And she stated why she was going after. You know, it's funny. When this happened a few days ago, you see the white Republicans come out. Oh, it could be misdemeanors. Bruh. Take that word back, bro, because you don't deserve to hear that for them. But let me just say this. Anytime they take a year and a half to investigate and they come up with 30 counts, you better believe there's more than misdemeanors. They had to unbarrel this man in with 30 counts. His lawyer's going to be up many nights trying to fight those 30 counts. 30 counts? Yes, sir. And I'll say something else, too. It was I think her name is Marjorie or whatever, say about a protest. I'm going to say this. New York ain't D.C. I'm going to say it again. New York is not D.C. Y'all people come from Montana, these other places, and act a fool. New York got a way of dealing with you. Trust me. They got a way, and they don't care. New Yorkers haven't been given a shit for a long time. They've been waiting to pop off on something. So come on with the protest. Come on with it. Because New Yorkers, I'll say it again, they don't care. Your response, Mr. DeRees.
Yeah, my thing was, you know, I think what all these different Georgia and the June 6th committee and all that, I think they've just been putting their ducks in a row. So I just think this is kind of the scratch of the surface with this indictment coming. It's the kind of, you know, Stormy Daniels and all that. It seems like it's fluff, but it's not. But it's really curious to me that the Republicans that are popping off and voicing now, you didn't do it when the June 6th indictment, you didn't do it with all the stuff of what he was doing in Georgia and all the stuff that he was doing with Ukraine and all that stuff. But now this is the horse you want to ride in on? Okay. I'm looking forward to seeing the New Yorkers do what they do. But I just think that this is the start or the catalyst to all these things coming behind, the indictments coming behind of all the things that this guy has done, just coming back to haunt him. I truly believe this. I don't even think he's going to live through this stuff. This is going to be so stressful, and the pressure is going to be so mounted on him that I don't even think I wouldn't be surprised if he tried to leave the country, do something crazy to get out of all this stuff, because he ain't got it to the point where he could take the heat of what's about to come from all these different sides. I don't think he can take it. I know he can't take it.
Back with you with your question, Mr. Charles. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem. You know what? I feel it and I see it, man, but I'm like, I'm not from Missouri, but damn it, you got to show me. And granted, I mean, I understand about New York being a lot different and how they handle business, but, bruh, and maybe I'm just a conspiracy theorist to a fault, D. Maurice. Anyway, just like you at the time, but dude, it's like, and I don't want to, they're not the same, but it's like the whole NCAA basketball thing, right, with the FBI and all the investigation, went all the way around the Mulberry Bush, and, oh, we got it, oh, yeah, he, oh, okay. And I know this is the presidency. I get this totally different. But, man, until they put that man in jail, I'm still on the outside, bro, because the system and what I've seen over the years in a number of things, it's my opinion, I've seen it disappoint. And even though the people have the evidence and all the other stuff, and they're right on point, it's not they haven't done their due diligence, but they always find loopholes. And to my, since I've been alive, I've never seen a standing president that I can remember ever go to jail. Ever. And maybe first time for everything, they fooled me when they made a black man president before a woman. So, hey, maybe I'll be surprised again. Until the incident, eat my popcorn and watch it.
You know what's interesting is, man, if you got to stake $100,000, because everybody in America assumed Trump is rich. Never been the case. They assumed that man bankrupt more things than they could imagine. They just saw him on television and assumed he had money. But if you got to take $100,000 from your campaign fund to pay somebody off, bro, you have no cash. You have no cash. If you got to take that from your campaign fund, you have no cash. Something I'm going to say before we get out of here, I think that we should start paying attention to, because a lot of times the media gives you what they want you to focus on. In San Francisco, they're ready to start paying reparations to black people in San Francisco, California. I know you haven't heard about it. I know I'm just speaking in general, not saying you two gentlemen, but in general population, because we don't pay attention to stuff that's going to benefit us. We need to keep an eye on that. And when that works itself out, wherever you live, you need to force other states to do something better or similar to it. Again,
yep.
Google that. San Fran is getting ready to pay folks reparations. You have something you want to say, Medimer? You got a minute. Go on, sir.
No, I totally agree. That's been under the radar. People haven't been talking about it, but I'm looking at that to set the precedent to start this whole movement with other states, because once that happens, folks are going to be chirping, stepping, protesting, like, I want my Tubman. So I'm looking forward to this.
Yes, sir.
And rent
again,
is
you know,
due.
We
rent is
yes,
due.
Absolutely. We talked about this a couple of years ago. It's been in the process, and it's starting to come to a head. So don't always look at what they show you. Go for what they're not showing you. Pay attention. Gentlemen, stay black. Stay who you are. We get together next week. We'll continue part two of The Shadow. It's When Black Men Talk. Mark Hillard, Mr. Charles, Mr. DeMaurice. Take care.